Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We believe in God, the Eternal Father.
We believe in the Bible to be the Word of God.
We believe in being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous.
We believe that through the atonement of Christ, all mankind.
We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God.
We may say that we follow the admonition of Paul. We believe all things. We hope all things. We have endured many things.
You're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome to Why I Believe. My name is Rick Starr. Our guest today is Olivia Mickle, who currently lives in China with her husband and three boys, and she is visiting here in Salt Lake with us today for a few weeks. You're back from China. That's great.
Yeah, we're here getting some grandparent time for my kids.
And oh, that's good. Where were you raised, Olivia?
We sort of moved around with my parents and my dad in school, but when we settled in elementary school, we landed in Kaysville, Utah, so that's where I grew up and went to Davis High School, and we lived here until we, a few years after my husband and I got married, we started bopping around the country for school and work. And
So you were raised in the church?
Yes.
When you say bopping around the country, I know your husband went to Duke.
Yeah, he went to Duke. He got his MBA at Duke. And so we were there for several years, and I loved it there. And then we moved to several different cities in Iowa. He works for John Deere. So we've been in Iowa and then to China, which was a rather stark contrast from Iowa to China.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you ever imagine that you would take a journey like that with your family?
We didn't. It's funny. From the time we got married, we talked about how we really wanted to give our children an international experience. We felt that the experiences we had had in international and just travel were very valuable, and that that's something we really wanted our children to have. And so we always talked about moving overseas, but China was never on my list. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because when we were going over the list of options, especially with John Deere places that we could end up, I always just sort of passed right over China and, yeah, in China, but we won't go there. And then when it started, sort of the fates started converging and everything was looking China, and suddenly, just even in our lives, random things about China kept coming up, and we looked at each other and thought, oh, no, here we go. So we had a little bit of adjustment time. I really wanted to move to India, and my husband was laughing that I thought China was too scary, but India was going to be fine. So I think it was good. China's a baby step toward India. So after a few days of kind of panicked, oh, what are we going to do in China? I was very excited, and we really thought, you know, who else gets to live in China with their children? So we were really excited about it.
How long has your family been in China now?
We've been there 2.5 years now.
Okay. And you've got three boys.
Three boys.
How old are they?
They are 10, 8, and 4.
Oh, so this is really a growing up experience
for
them, isn't
it? Yeah, our 4-year-old has spent the majority of his life in China, and it's really, you know, when people ask, where are you from? He doesn't have an answer other than China. As he gets strange looks, but that's where he's from. He doesn't remember anywhere else. So.
Well, we're going to talk about what life is like over in China as a family. Yeah, in just a minute. But I think that a lot of our listeners, when they think of living in China, you know, it used to be a lot more difficult for an American to live in China, but things have opened up quite a bit now.
Right.
And describe what that's like now, getting into China as an American family to live into mainland China.
I hate to dispel the myth because I really enjoy the ooh, China, and people think I'm this brave pioneer. It's really shockingly easy to live in China as an expat.
Really?
Well, I will qualify. To live in Beijing, there are many places in China where it would be very, very difficult to live as an expat. Because there is such a huge international community in Beijing, you can sort of exist in an American bubble as much as you would like. So our neighborhood, for instance, you live in a gated community. Almost all foreigners live within a gated community, and ours is about 50% Chinese, 50% foreigners, but all of the neighborhoods surrounding us are more than 95% foreigners. So we really are existing in a very unique environment there where you have neighbors from every country that you've ever heard of and several that I had never heard of. And and yet you are living in China, so you can sort of decide the level of your comfort. There are some people who aren't enjoying it very much there, and they can live in an American bubble and really not experience much of China if they don't want to. Or you can go out and immerse yourself in China as much as you would like. It's not what I expected when we moved there, and it's quite a bit easier than I thought it was going to be. I was prepared for pioneering, living in these tiny little Chinese houses with no one speaking English around me and not being able to get any food. And I prepped the kids, we're not going to eat peanut butter for lots of years, and you're never going to have. And I was really, and I didn't know, can we eat the fruit? Can we drink the water? You know?
Yeah.
And so it was a really pleasant surprise when we moved there, and it was really a very smooth, easy transition.
Hmm.
But it is really a fascinating experience to live there, because the Chinese love Americans. They love them. And we've never been so embraced by people as we are. I mean, we're also a walking freak show, because I have red hair and my husband is 6'4" and my children are blonde. And, you know, everywhere we go, you do get your picture taken. That is one thing that people think happens. It is absolutely true. And your children will be snagged for pictures. And they get, my children love it. They think they're rock stars. And to the point where my 10-year-old is sometimes leaping into pictures where he's not wanted. He just assumes if a camera is out, it's aimed at him.
And so he goes and
so
joins another family.
So he gets in people's pictures who really didn't want him there. It's a very friendly sort of interest. It's not, oh, look at those weird people. They're just so excited to talk to you and to even just stand next to you.
That is really great.
They are such a friendly country, and the people are just so genuinely happy and outgoing and want to talk to you and want to, even if they know four words of English, they're leaning out their car window yelling, "Hello, how are you?"
That's
they're
great.
Waving as you go past. My children love it. They love my children. It's really nice.
That's great. Talk about the area that you live in as far as you talked a little bit about the community,
yeah.
How do your children go to school? What's that like?
There's an international school, because there are 18 million people in Beijing. There are 160,000 foreigners living in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So they live in pockets. And so our pocket is quite small, and it feels like a small town, not a small town, but a small city within mm-hmm. a city. And there is an international school there, which is I can't say enough good things about the school. It's an unbelievably good school.
Are they taught in English?
Yes. It's a completely English curriculum. It's based on an American curriculum mostly. There are some things that they've brought in from British curriculum, Australian curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an English-based education, and it's all international students. And all of the teachers are from all over the world, but they have to speak English at a first language level. So they are either an native English speaker, or the English is so good that you really cannot tell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really fascinating experience. My second grader's class has 14 children in it.
Oh, wow.
That tells you what you need to know right there. There are 14 children in a second grade class, but in his class, there are, I think, 9 different countries represented within 14 children.
Incredible.
And
what an experience for your
children.
It's
really an amazing experience. This education they're getting is just incredible.
Do they learn Chinese in school? Just Chinese by immersion in the community?
They do that, too. But because, you know, they are living in this international community, so it's harder for them to learn Chinese than you would think it is, because they're not interacting with a lot of Chinese mm-hmm. children. There are a lot of children from Taiwan in the school. There are many children whose parents are Chinese, but the child was born in America.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go, they have an American passport, they can go to the international school. But in general, it's not a Chinese environment. So they study Chinese for an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. I speak Chinese fairly well. I can pretty much communicate anything that I need to within my realm of, you know, I can't, my husband speaks business Chinese, I speak shopping and children Chinese. And so between the two of us, we can communicate fairly well, but I cannot write at all. I decided that I was going to focus on speaking, because I can always ask someone to read something to me, but if I don't understand what they're telling me, it doesn't do me any good. But my son is learning, my 10-year-old is learning characters, and he can write pages and pages and pages of Chinese characters
really?
Just as easily as writing English, and it blows my mind. I sit there and I watch him write these essays in Chinese, and then he has to read them to me. I don't know what he's writing. So, but for many people, the only real interaction they have with Chinese people is going to be with their employees. If they're, you know, if they're working there, or if they're, for many of the, like many of the mothers are at home, because if you move to China, you cannot get a visa unless a company brings you there. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, I want to go live in China and live there. You're not allowed to do that. So, usually a company is bringing over one spouse on a work visa, and unless the other spouse can find a job within that same company or with another company in China who's willing to invite them to come, mm-hmm. One member of that couple is not going to be working while they're in China. So you have a bunch of mostly mothers who are at home all day, much more than you would in the community anywhere else, I think. And so it's really interesting. You have sort of this, we call it the Thai. And Thai Thai means the lady of the house, mm-hmm. and it also means wife, and so they're called the Thai Thais, and somewhat disparagingly referred to as the Thai Thai syndrome, where you suddenly have huge amounts of time on your hands and nothing to do with it, and so that, you know, you can get cheap pedicures, and there's a lot of shopping, and there's a lot of going out to lunch, and it's really easy to sort of slip into this lady of leisure life. It's very interesting, and especially because you have an IE, almost every family in Beijing, Chinese or foreign, mm-hmm. has an IE, which is sort of a maid slash nanny who doesn't live in your home. In Beijing, they do not live in Hong Kong, they usually do. But and she cleans your house and watches your children and cooks your food. And she'll, and when you have that all of a sudden and your children are in school and you have nothing to do,
wow.
It's very interesting. But so most of my friends, the only interaction they have with Chinese people is with their IE. So if they don't learn to speak Chinese, they can't talk to their IE.
They just point
or, you know, call their friend or husband who speaks Chinese, or you can accomplish a lot with sign language. It's quite interesting. But so, you know, I think unless you make a concerted effort to get out there and actually make Chinese friends experience this culture, you really could live in a little bubble the whole time. It's a very interesting, strange world. It's a fake, surreal existence for a few years. So,
in your own community, where you have lots of friends, and you said that this Thai Thai syndrome, lots of mothers who probably spend, you know, you can spend lots of time with each other and that kind of thing. Are you allowed to talk about to other internationals? Are you allowed to talk about the church and that kind of
yes,
thing?
Yes, we are. To anyone with a foreign passport, we can talk about anything we want. Mm-hmm. And we, you can do any missionary work that you could do in America, you could do there. But among Chinese nationals, we are not allowed to even answer questions. Mm. We're not allowed to bring it up at all. We're not allowed to interact with the Chinese branch. There is a Chinese branch. They consist of Chinese nationals who joined the church while overseas. So maybe they went to school, went to BYU. A lot of Chinese people go to BYU because it's a fairly cheap way to get a graduate education in America. So many people are joining the church overseas and then moving back to China. They are allowed to go to church, but they are not allowed to go to church with foreigners. And so we have two branches of foreigners who meet in the morning, sort of crammed together, overlapping. And then there is an hour where we clear the building, and then the Chinese branch comes in. I think it does sort of change your perspective on things when you're not allowed to talk about it. Suddenly you want to talk about it all the time. You realize how much you want to share this message with people who really seem to want to hear it. And and it's very frustrating not to be able to say anything about it. But we also, I mean, it's comforting because, I don't know, we have interesting experiences. You know, when you come back from China, you get varied reactions when people ask, oh, where are you from? Where are you living? And we get everything from very excited to just sort of shocked silence of, why would anyone move to China? And one of the things that we notice is that people do seem to have a fearful response to China. And I guess I never experienced that. My family growing up was very international minded. They were very, you know, we were encouraged to explore the world, and my parents didn't really have the money to explore the world, but they would occasionally with their university professors, and so with college tours they would go, and it was always something that I was very interested in and always something that I wanted to do. And I find myself I keep being shocked at the reaction of people that I understand China is not for everyone, but mm-hmm. that people would be horrified that I would choose to live in China surprises me. And one of the things I try to do is change people's perspectives on what China is like. We hear a lot of crazy things, a lot of really strange sort of fear-mongering things about the Chinese people. And and it's frustrating and it's disturbing because I love the Chinese people and they are kind and sweet and not what they're portrayed to be in many aspects of American culture and in many aspects of the media currently. They're just universally delightful people.
Yeah. So. It's interesting that, you know, living in America, we get our perspective of China is through the lens of the media mostly, and that lens mainly focuses on either economics or politics. Mm-hmm. And we really never get to know the people of China.
Like and you, I mean, I don't want to – I absolutely – agree that there are serious issues to be addressed in China. There are serious human rights issues that that are not to be glossed over lightly. Oh, everything's fine, and there are definitely problems. But the people are genuinely wonderful people, and you know, I think that of course is going to be true no matter where you go. But the culture of China and the just the genuine love of life is really amazing. It's a completely different feel to life there and to the things that are valuable and to just the way you look at your life is completely different. And it's been a very life-changing experience for me and for my family to get a different perspective on what's important, what matters, how you need to live your life and what to expect out of your life. Mm-hmm. It's been very eye-opening and interesting for us.
Wow. We'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our guest today is Olivia Mickle, who lives in China with her husband and three boys. And you're here back visiting the U.S. during the summertime with your three boys, I assume. Your husband's still in China.
Yeah, he arrives tomorrow.
So. He'll be here soon to join you. And I know that's the case that a lot of families who live in a lot of expat situations in other nations, a lot of the families will come back to visit grandparents, like you said, get some grandparent time, and sometimes the husbands are left back in there, back in the country for a little while, or they may join at a later time. But in fact, talk about that. Before the program, we were talking about your the husband groups that get together.
The branches are funny because there is sort of the summer flight where as soon as school gets out, a lot of the families, a lot of the children and the women leave. And they many of them have homes in America where they go for the summer. But, of course, many of the men are not – they have to work and they can't leave for the entire – the summer, in quotes, in China. Because of the way international schools work, you get off the Chinese holidays and the Western holidays. So the summer is very short. It's really 6 weeks long because maybe it's 7 weeks long. Because when you take off a week for Chinese holidays and a week for Christmas and a week – you know, you run out of time. So it's not the entire summer. But there's a significant section of the branch that leaves for the entire summer.
Mostly women and children.
Women and children. And so there are many weeks where it's three women and 20 men. And we're all sitting looking at each other saying, well, what do we do now? And at one point last summer, I was the only woman at church. And so I taught my children, who were the only children at church in primary, and the men had their meetings. And, you know, these men are sort of left behind to fend for themselves. And so they call them slob evenings, single, lonely old bachelors. And they go to the people's house who have, many of the Foreign Service members have American TV and they can watch basketball games and football games. And they, you know, eat man food and watch man TV. We don't do that. My husband, he's coming 4 days after we are because he had some meetings he needed to be at. But we don't do that. So I am often, we're the only, you know, there's a few children out of the primary and still hanging on for the summer. But it surprises me the things that you forget. Like, you know, they mentioned something was happening with Cub Scouts at my sister-in-law's house. And I said, but where are the children aren't here? And then I realized, oh, the children are here. In the real world, people stay where they live for the summer. You just lose your perspective on what's normal. It's very funny. So.
What other type of things do you do during the summer? I assume you've gone to some different places in Asia or just in China?
Yeah, it's very, very hot in most of China for the summer. And so mm-hmm. it's kind of a miserable
humid,
time
right?
to go anywhere. It's incredibly humid.
Yeah.
It's very cold and very dry in Beijing all winter. Hmm. And then within about a week, it shifts and it's very hot and very humid. So many people
wow.
have a dehumidifier and a humidifier and they unplug one and plug the other one in. So it's you get about 3 nice weeks of weather and then the rest of the time it's not great. But it is, I mean, it's a very... Beijing is surprising. When we moved there and I got off the plane and I looked around, I was very disappointed because I expected it to look like what China looks like in Americans' view. And the mountains and, you know, the Chinese paintings that you see and the rivers and the mountains and the mist. And it looks shockingly like Iowa. I mean, it looks like Chicago. It looks,
you mean there's a lot of flatlands?
It's flat. Beijing is flat. It's near the Gobi Desert, so it's not a particularly green place. They've planted tons of trees. There's trees lining all the freeways. So it is a very nice, it's a beautiful city, but it's not particularly Chinese looking. Mm. And then, so I was disappointed, and then I felt stupid because I thought, okay, it's 18 million people. What did I expect this to look like? But once, it's not the way you expect it to look in northern China. And then I realized how ridiculous that was. That's like expecting all of America to look like Louisiana, because China is as large as the U.S. geographically.
Very diverse.
And it's as diverse as the U.S. And so we did a couple of years ago, we went down to a place called Yangshuo, which is the most beautiful place. It is what Americans think China looks like. And so we kept looking around saying, here now, we're finally in China. Here we are.
That's the China that you've seen in pictures.
Yeah, the mountains, and they're called karst peaks. They're just surreal and unearthly looking, and you're riding bamboo rafts down the river, and you know, so there's herons everywhere. That's what I expected in Beijing, and it's not at all like that. It's shockingly familiar. But it's a very interesting contrast, because you will be driving through a very modern city. They are very, very proud of their modern architecture. And there is not one building that is boring in Beijing. Everything is fascinating. The architecture is bizarre. They have buildings that look like dragons, and there's one that we call the giant pants, and it looks like giant pants. That's all I can explain it. And it's hanging out ludicrously far over the side of itself and looks like it's about to tip over. Everywhere you go, it's very interesting looking. But it's not what I expected, and so you go out and you see, you can just drive around Beijing and see things you've never seen. Living there 2.5 years, I realized I've seen 10% of the city, and I'm never going to see most of it. So in the summer we tend to just sort of stay close to home in Beijing and do fun kid friendly things, although there are no other children to play with because everyone goes home.
Everybody leaves. Yeah.
But in the October, there's an October holiday where you get a week off in China, and so we tend to flee the country because all of China comes to Beijing on vacation. So
really?
You can't really do anything.
They like going to the city.
Yeah, huge amounts of rural tourists come into Beijing anytime there's a holiday. So we leave then because you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. So
well, that's when the weather's a little nicer.
It's gorgeous.
October
holiday there's about 3 weeks. I'll give advice. If you're going to China, April or May or September or August, and that's when you want to go because it won't be too hot, it won't be too cold, it won't be miserably windy. If you're lucky in October, you might get a sandstorm, which is always an exciting wake up to an orange sky and half of it.
Because you're right on the edge,
edge of the Gobi. Yeah, we're on the edge of the Gobi Desert, so you get these crazy orange sandstorms blowing through, and every day's an adventure.
Do you get a sense, even though you don't get to associate with members of the church who are Chinese nationals, do you get a sense for what about the church they love or like? I mean, there's different aspects of the church that might attract them initially, maybe family history or that kind of thing.
Well, family history in China is definitely something that is very attractive. Most of the members of the church that I know that are Taiwanese, so I know, you know, and it could be a very different perspective, but from the Taiwanese perspective, I know that one of the mainly attractive things is, you know, family history is very important in China. It's very important to know who they are. They know generations and generations and generations back wow. by memory. You know, I mean, they...
That's a lot of temple work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we think it's cool. Oh, I got my family history back to, you know, 1100. And, you know, they say, well, yes, I know 9,000 years of my family history.
Wow.
You know, they have these giant lists of thousands of years of family names that have been carefully kept and passed on. Here we need to say, go find your family history. There they say, well, you show me your family history because
they already have it.
The reverence for your ancestors and for where you came from is something that I think is very shared and that we can learn from them the way that we need to think about these things. That, you know, this is your family, and it just because they have died, it doesn't make them any less your family.
Right. So. That really shines a new light on that scripture in Malachi, turning the hearts of the children to their fathers. What a great example the Chinese people are to us of that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very interesting. My IE, my nanny helper, is Muslim, and there's a very significant Muslim population. China, we think of China as this block that is China, and it is very much not. There is the main section of China where most of the people are Han, and that's their ethnicity, and that's what we think of as China. But there are many, many, many groups in China geographically who do not want to be part of China and don't consider themselves part of China and have absolutely nothing in common with China. So if you go to, you know, mainly the western areas of China, you would not know that you're in China. There's, you know, very Tibetan areas, there's very Buddhist areas, there's very areas that are much more like Turkey and Muslim and Turkish culture, and it's really, my husband travels to these places and he said, it's shocking. You get off the plane and you think, whoa, am I in China?
Did they take
me to the wrong place?
Yeah.
The people are different. The culture is different. The food is different. The clothes are different. The music is different. The landscape is different. He said it doesn't look anything like
they just happen to be within the political borders of China.
They happen to be within the borders that the government said, and here's China.
Well, you've really given us a great picture of what China is and how diverse it is and what it's like to live there. It's very interesting. Are there any specific stories that have been special to you about being in China, to you or your family?
Yeah, I think I've talked about this a bit. I think if, you know, people say, you know, what's the one thing that people don't know about China, and there's a million things. But I think that if I could bring one thing back from China to give to America, it would be the freedom that Chinese people have within themselves to do what they want. And it's almost impossible to explain. I tried explaining this to my parents, and you know, they understood it. But when they arrived and saw it, they were just shocked. And mostly that there is absolutely no sense of self-consciousness in Chinese people. And I hate to generalize, but I have yet to meet a Chinese person that felt self-conscious ever about anything. I think when you live your life so publicly, you're so crammed together, and there, you know, there was this communal aspect of life that you can do what you want and no one is going to bat an eye. I mean, not politically, obviously, but if you go to any park in Beijing in the morning on any day of the year, you will find hundreds and hundreds of people, mostly retired. Once you retire, this is what you do. But young people, everyone, out doing their morning play. And that's really the word they use. You know, in America, if we are as adults doing something fun, we have a different name for it. We're doing that activity, or we're hanging out with our friends, or we're going out for the night. They play, and that's the same word. If you go out with your friends as an adult, you are going out to play. And I absolutely love that. And it's 100% true. They play in a way that we are so self-conscious that we are not allowed to do. You can go to the park and there will be 50 women doing tango dancing. And next to that, there are people with their karaoke machines, and one is singing Peking Opera and the next one is singing Lady Gaga. And after that, there's people doing Tai Chi. And after that, there's people doing aerobic dance. And next to them, there's people in full-on costumes doing ethnic minority dance. And next to them, there's people playing poker and Chinese checkers and knitting little hats and sitting around and talking to their friends. And then there's people doing Western swing dancing. And then they're everywhere. It's just, the park is packed with people for about 3 hours in the morning having fun with their friends. And there's at the Temple of Heaven, which is one of my favorite. If you go to China, go to the Temple of Heaven early in the morning and just hang out in the park for an hour and a half and watch people. And it.
What is the Temple of Heaven?
It's an old, I think it's from the 16th. Let me think. 1400s, I believe, and it was where the emperor did sacrifices to heaven to thank the heavens for a good harvest and all these things. And it's a beautiful, gorgeous, fascinating building on its own.
It's a building, not a park.
It's surrounded by a park. It's a park, and then it's a series of buildings. In China, there are no giant. You know, you go to the Forbidden City. I expected a giant palace where the emperor lives. The actual place where the emperor lived is smaller than my bedroom. And they build series of buildings in a row. They don't ever build giant edifices. It's always very small buildings in a compound. But this is, it's a very tall temple. It's a circular temple built with no nails and no, it's a gorgeous building. And then a series of other buildings around it and altars. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous place to go. It's one of my children's favorite place to go. But for me, the best part of it is the people in the park. It's a huge park. I'm terrible at spatial relations. I have no idea how big this park is, but it's very large. And enough, I'm not exaggerating when I say thousands of people every morning are there playing. And they're playing rollyball and they're, you know, they're, it's just unbelievable. They're doing ribbon dancing. They're running around clapping for no reason. I mean, you could walk out there in the strangest costume you've ever invented and start yodeling. And people would come and clap and go, good for you. And they really honestly mean that. Everywhere you go, you will see people. We kept seeing people in these, you know, in the Forbidden City, in the Summer Palace, there will be a man in the corner playing an arhu or, you know, these Chinese instruments. And for months, we kept saying, where is his hat? For the money. You know, we're so used that you only would do this to earn money or to beg.
And he was just playing.
He just is playing because he likes to play. And you're out there singing because you like to sing. And now, as we've lived there long enough, I can tell sort of who is good and who is not at these Chinese singing. To the untrained ear, Chinese singing is very shockingly disturbing, but I'm getting better at telling. And there are women who will be singing and men who are amazingly talented. And they have women crying listening to them, and they're just beautiful. And people are clapping and cheering. But next to that, you have someone who is honestly terrible. And people are clapping and cheering every bit as much for that person because they're having fun and they're doing what they love. And that's what it's about. And if I could bring anything back, that's what I would bring. We are so bottled up with our self-consciousness and our, oh, I don't want to look stupid. And, you know, and I think I really am very serious in thinking it's destroying our lives in a way. We're not allowed to do what we want to do. It's, you know, At 32 years old in China, I decided to start learning Bollywood dancing, which is Indian dancing. I on no planet would have done that in America because it would be embarrassing, maybe as an exercise class. But this is a group of about 40 foreign women who learn dancing, Indian dancing, and perform in public. And we're not great. I mean, we're not professional dancers. A few of us are great. A few of us are really, truly terrible. I think I'm somewhere in the middle. And we perform and people love it. And even the expat population there has embraced this way of thinking that if this makes you happy, you should be doing it. And who cares if you're any good or not? And I think, you know, we have this attitude in America of, well, you know, we should be, unless you're a professional, don't do it. It's embarrassing. Dance lessons are for girls until they're 12, and then they either go professional or they quit.
Yeah.
Because that would be embarrassing for a grown woman to perform in public. That would be bad.
We've drawn a lot of borders around things.
We do. And, you know, I think American Idol didn't cause the problem, but it's a very good example of the problem that we take these unbelievably talented people, and especially So You Think You Can Dance. This show, and I love this show. It's fascinating. We don't get it over there, but I watch it. And I love these dancers. They're amazing. But just the theory of this show, that we take the top most
only
talented dancers in the country.
Only the specific
ones. And then we kick them off week by week for not being good enough. This is a disturbed country that does this. I'm sorry, it's wrong and it's crazy. And the fact that the show is called So You Think You Can Dance. I mean, just how dare you think that you could do this?
That would be titled Everybody Thinks They Can Dance.
And no one would win. It would just show these incredible dancers. And I understand you need a competition for the drama, but the attitude in which we do it is that unless you are the best at this thing, you should be embarrassed to be doing it. And that's ridiculous and it's destructive. It sounds all touchy-feely and crazy, but I have filled a hole in me that was missing, that I didn't know was missing by doing this dancing. And I am sad for people who don't have this, and I'm sad for myself for all of the years before that I could have been doing things like this. You know, we have very structured, we're allowed to sing if we're good, in sacrament meeting. We're allowed to dance if we're a professional or we're dancing with children. Mm-hmm. But we should be out there in the park every morning dancing. So I've told my husband, and I'm not kidding, when we're old, I'm moving to China. I want to move to China and have a life. I'm going to have a life. And if I die 3 years earlier from pollution and lack of great medical care, I will trade that for a canned life in a house by myself, miserable. I will go out and play with my friends.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it seems like as things open up, and as they surely will over time, it will be wonderful to get to know the Chinese people as they really are in their daily lives across, you know, as we don't see them.
Yeah.
That will be a wonderful thing, to really get to know and meet these Chinese people who live this way.
Because they really do. One of the main motivations we had in moving overseas was to give our children the perspective that there is more to the world than America. And we love America, but there is more to the world. Mm-hmm. And the more you can learn about other cultures, the more you realize that your culture is a made-up thing. You know, 90%
of it's
we created it, and not on any rational basis, not on any, you know, I think we have a tendency to believe that our culture is right and the other cultures kind of come close to being right. And when you realize that most of what we do is no more right than what they do, than any other country does, then you can start to bring in the best of all things. I hope that I am instilling play in myself and in my children and in the people that I can talk about it to, and bringing that in. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, when we travel, we are very lucky that we get to travel a lot. The company gives us trips out of the country, because when we first moved there, we thought, ooh, free vacations, but you really do need it. You really do need
some time away
to not start to hate living there. But so my children have had the chance to travel to Spain and Hawaii and New Zealand and places that they never would have been. And they're so open to these cultures, and they find the good immediately in a way that I don't think would happen if they were children raised in a place where this is how it is. You know, we went to the distribution center. And we were walking in to buy some things. My husband teaches early morning seminary, and we were buying the things for that. And my son said, "Mom, is this store about our church?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "So everyone in this store is going to be a member of the church?" And I said, "Yes, probably." He said, "Wow, that is so cool." And I realized, oh, I'm so, you know, they find that so exciting. Whereas, you know, I grew up, of course everyone's a member of the church. Everyone around me, you know, and to an irritating degree, assuming that everyone is a member of the church. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad that we've given them that perspective where they can appreciate the uniqueness of their own culture and be able to bring in the best of other cultures. You know, when they do country reports in school, every child does their country. Because it's less about learning. You don't need to learn about other countries. You know about all – you've been to all these other countries, and your best friends are from them. It's about the presentation skills and teaching about your country. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to watch these kids be so proud of their countries, and my son desperately trying to get out of doing America because America's boring. Everybody knows about America because he's got the mindset that, you know, that everything else is so interesting. And I think that is a healthy place to start, because that's when you start to realize, you know, we started pointing out America has this, America has this. Oh, yeah. You know, you get so used to, you don't appreciate Utah until you move somewhere else.
Yeah, you take it for granted.
Utah? wow, mountains and cowboys and Indians. And, you know, well, yeah, okay, not so much now, but yeah, cowboys, Indians. You know, my kids wear their cowboy outfits or their baseball uniforms on International Day because there's not really a good American costume to wear other than that. But
that's pretty American.
Yeah, we figured, all right, baseball, that's good.
Well, Olivia, we have just a few minutes left before we need to close out our program. But before we do, you've touched on this just a little bit already, but talk a little bit about how living in China has affected your appreciation for the gospel. And then if we could close out by you sharing your testimony, that'd be
sure.
Wonderful.
It was unexpected, the difference. I didn't really think about that aspect of it when we moved, you know, and I didn't know what to expect when we first found that we were moving to China. We expected to be going to church in our house by ourselves. Mm. Or, you know, we didn't expect to have, and we have a huge branch. It's a branch only in name, I think, because of the way it works with the government. But we have, I think it's 130 people in our branch. Mm. And it was really interesting. I came from a ward that I was not overly fond of. And so I really wasn't sure what to expect there. And I, you know, people said, oh, the church is so close and you'll make all these friends and all of the members are best friends. And I thought, oh no, I don't want to move to China to live in Utah. You know, I don't want to, but it was a very amazing experience to me because these people are mostly foreign service members who have lived all over the world. You know, we're boring old only lived in China. They've lived in 5 or 7 countries. Mm. And the perspective on the gospel that you get with people who understand that, who understand how the gospel works all over the world, and who have lived every aspect of the gospel in so many different ways, and who have gone to church with 4 people, and have gone to church where they don't speak the language for a year, and you start to focus in on the core issues that are really important, and you can separate out gospel from culture, you can separate out because I think, you know, that does get very mixed up, especially in Utah, but all over, you know, those things can get intertwined. And when you start to pull those apart and you realize, you know, my Swedish friend who sees things so differently than I do, and my friend who is Western but was raised in communist China as mm-hmm. a member of the Communist Party, have incredibly unique experiences to share and perspectives on the gospel. And my testimony has really grown so strong on things that I had never even thought about, aspects of the gospel that I had never thought about, and the way it really is true for everyone, and that there is truth in there for every culture, for every place that you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And though we might have vastly different answers to the questions that people pose in Relief Society, they are all correct answers. And that the value of those perspectives in strengthening my testimony has been really amazing. And I think my children are asking questions that I never dreamed of asking until I hit college, because they see this huge mix of religions and cultures and they understand those things and they're asking profound spiritual questions because they're so open to these things. And I watch their testimonies grow so strong at such a young age from this. And it's been very interesting to me. You know, my son, when he was 8 years old, right after he got baptized, said, Mom, how do we know God is God? And mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, okay, so I got to break out the college philosophy books and the C.S. Lewis. You know, I mean, these are profound questions, and we can have these very long discussions and build testimonies and have those hard questions asked at an early age so that they don't shock you when they hit you at mm-hmm. 18 in college. Oh, how do we know God is God? How do we know that this stuff is true? Mm-hmm. And
ask them when the simple faith of a child
can
help those questions be answered.
And the ability to see the other perspectives strengthening yours instead mm-hmm. of other perspectives attacking you. You know, I think when you get old enough, you can see any question as attacking what you believe. And I think my children have been able to gain the ability to see questions as a very valuable tool in strengthening their testimony. Mm-hmm. How do we know that God is God? How do we know that these things that we're learning are true? Mm-hmm. And just the fundamental questions become so much more important when you're in this environment and when you are out in the thick of it, I think. Mm-hmm. And And just the idea that your religion is limited obviously immediately makes it more valuable to you. You realize how important it is and how much you value it when you realize that it might be gone, you know, at any moment. Hmm. And that's a very strong motivator to me to make sure that I understand and that I, if I couldn't go to church, that I would remain strong in the gospel. And it absolutely has done that for me. And I do have a very strong testimony that this gospel is the truth and that it offers truth to everyone in the world in a way that they can understand it. And if we the more that we open up as a church, the more important it becomes that we understand that difference, the difference between what the gospel offers and what the culture offers. And I think mm-hmm. it's been very fun for me to watch the church doing that and to watch it figuring those things out in my branch, right in front of me. Well, why do we do it that way? Well, why do we do it that way? You know, we have members asking who have joined the church just recently from foreign countries saying, but why is it important that we do that? Oh, why is that important? I don't know. And you have to think those things through. And sometimes it's not important. And sometimes, oh, well, this is why that's important. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very, very testimony strengthening and valuable experience for me.
Mm, wonderful. Olivia, thank you so much for being with us today on Why I Believe. You've just given a wonderful, unique perspective about your experience in China.
Thanks.
It's been great to have you here with us.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Olivia Mickle has been our guest today on Why I Believe. We appreciate your listening and remind you that you're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and have a great day.